Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's Connecting Faith. So glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Stavem. We enjoy the opportunity to get together and share with you some powerful stories. Today is one of those examples of life change, of hope and transformation. And I know you're going to want to stick around for it. And if you missed part of it today, that you'll want to go back and check out the interview online. We post the podcasts on myfaithradio.com and the Connecting Faith show page after each show. And by the way, when you're there at myfaithradio.com, you'll see right in the front page an opportunity to sign up for a free download of Alistair Begg's latest book. It's called Lasting Love, a valuable resource for seeking, building, and maintaining a solid marital foundation. You can get a free download of this audiobook from Alistair Begg at myfaithradio.com. Ted, that'd be a nice resource to have, I think, and just everybody's kind of into the audiobooks now.
Yeah, you know, even if you think your marriage is doing fine, we can always tweak things and get some insight from Alistair Begg. He's wonderful. So,
check that out. Hear him each afternoon, of course, in Truth for Life, and you can get this resource during the month of August here online, myfaithradio.com. My guest today experienced lasting love on behalf of his wife because he was... as he tells his story in the new book, Highly Functional, A Collision of Addiction, Justice, and Grace. I mean, he spent some 20, almost 30 years essentially hiding his drinking, although his wife had kind of figured it out and kind of came to a head, and we're going to hear a bit about his story. And I think if you've maybe listened to Real Recovery, he's been on with... George and Bill some time ago, but the book is just out, and we do have a copy. In fact, we'll give away the copy here at the end of the hour, do a little drawing, because I think there's probably somebody that this story will really resonate with, or you know somebody that should read this book.
We all love a good story of redemption, because we all need to be redeemed in one way or another, so I look forward to this.
Well, Craig DeRoche is back with us on Connecting Faith. He's Executive Director of Justice Fellowship. That's the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship in Washington, D.C., of course, Prison Fellowship, that wonderful ministry founded by Chuck Colson, and you hear about Prison Fellowship kind of regularly here through the Breakpoint and other opportunities here on Faith Radio. The mission of Prison Fellowship, Justice Fellowship, is to work to restore those affected by crime and incarceration. And Craig and the Justice Fellowship team advocate for restorative justice values across the American criminal justice system at the federal, state, and local level. He was a former city councilman, a state legislator, and Speaker of the House in Michigan, one of the youngest in that position. And through his drinking, and we'll get into that story, he kind of faced starting all over, literally starting over. He's married to Stacy. They have three children. Yeah, three daughters, and they live in Novi, Michigan. And Craig, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Neil, it's just an honor and a privilege to be on your show and be with you and to share, what I got to experience in God's power, grace, and way of life, and with you and your audience. So thank you.
Well, we're going to let you share your story in just a moment, but I'm interested, I guess, because you're working with Justice Fellowship now, and I know that you were very active in the political realm, and you know, a councilman, a state legislator. You were a Speaker of the House. The youngest, I think, in Michigan at the time. Were you kind of one of those three strikes, you're out, lock them up, throw away the keys kind of guys before you encountered your fall from the limelight?
Well, actually, I kind of toggled around on these issues. Actually, before I was in the statewide arena of people watching what I did and the advocacy of different positions that I would take, I actually fought against the DARE program when I was on the city council because I didn't think it was helping kids. When I was in the legislature, the first budget that I proposed, which was about a $43 billion budget when I was Speaker of the House, I advocated for the closing of three prisons. And so I had this contribution that I thought that I might be able to make because of my understanding of people that were suffering in addiction, that were having these problems, that were breaking the law in different ways. But what was lacking from my argument was the truth about who I was and how I was living my life. So I always had to stop short of explaining really why I believe these things. And the prison stayed open because the governor at the time took to the television and ran ads all over the state of Michigan that I was going to cost jobs and hurt the economies of those cities. And I didn't have the courage, and I didn't have the ability to actually speak what I believe was the truth of the failings of the prison system, because I felt that it would expose, you know, my own problem, that I was living in addiction. It was an unresolved issue, and so I kind of cowered from it. the issues when they came up, to be honest with you.
Well, you tell your story in the new book just out called Highly Functional, A Collision of Addiction, Justice, and Grace. And you're, the 29 years, right? You were drinking significantly?
Yeah, when I was 10 up until I was 39 years old. So it was a long period of time. It wasn't I didn't have where I was drinking on a daily basis. That started when I was 14 years old and working in a convenience store, a liquor store, stocking their shelves. And I then had access to alcohol on a daily basis. But I was able to go, through all those years and all those different life events while trying to manage my drinking and perform jobs and relationships and all the other things that life brings, and try to somehow keep control of something I never really had any control over.
Just as a side note, does it make sense for a 14-year-old to be stocking shelves in a liquor store? I mean, is that a good job to have?
Yeah, different times, okay. Different things. I think people of a certain age in this country, we all always talk about things, but it certainly it was different. I'm not sure that anybody gave a lot of thought to it back then.
Okay. Your crash came pretty publicly, right? I mean, it just it truly fell apart. Your drinking was out of control. It was affecting your marriage and family and your work. And just tell a little bit about maybe that fall from the top down to the bottom.
Well, what happened was I left office January 1st of 2009. And flash forward to a year later, the business that I created when I left the role of leader in the Republican caucus in the Michigan legislature, I thought I would start a business and rebuild my finances. I had been successful in business before being elected. But by then, my drinking was really getting in the way of it because for your listeners and for those that know about this, addiction is a progressive situation where the person that finds himself in addiction, it doesn't stay the same. It continues to escalate over the days and hours and years. And so mine had escalated at that point to where it truly was in a bad situation when I went back to drinking. But I had already been trying to stop drinking for a decade. And so I didn't drink every day in 2010, but the days I did, I got arrested on two of them, and I probably only drank 10 days that whole year. But when I did drink it, you know, my control over the substance had completely left me, and I was arrested twice in, as you say, quite a public way, where I ended up losing. The first time was in over 200 newspapers. It was on the news wires, and the second time it was such a news story that I had helicopters flying over my house, and I was on the Fox News Channel and CNN. My family, my wife had to move out of the house because of all the press coming in, taking pictures through the windows, and even putting on pictures of my kids' playground equipment and things like that on the 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock news that day. So it was a very traumatic experience that my drinking and the arrest had on everybody that I was associated with and my clients. I was consulting at the time, and as I said, not my business was generally failing, but it was at least work and it was some revenue. They after the second arrest all took the initiative to cancel their contracts with me, so I had no income. My name and was my reputation was my really what I traded on to earn money as a consultant, and that was toxic in the media. And my wife, for all the right reasons of being a good and responsible parent to our children, wasn't sure that she wanted to stay married to me, which I you know think was a very reasonable place for her to be in at that time. And I couldn't even stay in the rehabilitation clinic because it was my third visit there, and it was the first time that I actually showed up sober. And the insurance companies don't cover you when you show up to a rehab hospital sober. So I had invalidated my insurance coverage by trying to do the right thing and staying sober that day. And so literally, as I say, God loved me enough to take away everything. There was nothing left standing in my life that day that I was waking up in a rehab hospital in June of 2010.
I think we're just going to take a break right here and sort of let the cliffhanger go, because there's more to this story we want to hear. Craig DeRoche has a powerful testimony. He's written about it in a new book called Highly Functional. It's a collision of addiction, justice, and grace. Now, Craig serves now as the Executive Director of Justice Fellowship. It's the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship in Washington, D.C., and we're going to talk about restorative justice values across the criminal justice system in America and some of those important ideals and concepts, and particularly as followers of Christ are a part in that. But we want to hear more of Craig's story, and let's get to the grace side, too, because that's an important part of restorative justice as well. We'll hear more from Craig DeRoche in just a moment. If you'd like to sign up for a copy of Craig's story, his book, Highly Functional, give us a call. We'll put you in the drawing, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. You may know someone very close to you that if they would read this book, they might begin to move that path toward toward restoration and wholeness. MyFaithRadio.com is the website. If you want to connect with us on email, it's the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there at MyFaithRadio.com or 877-93-FAITH.
This is amazing grace.
Talking today with Craig DeRoche, Executive Director of Justice Fellowship. It's the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship, a ministry that's working to restore those affected by crime and incarceration. Craig, we're going to talk about his professional life and this important work that he's doing and the great ministry that he's leading. But we're hearing more of his story, which he's recounted in a powerful book called Highly Functional. It's a collision of addiction, justice, and grace. As you heard, if you were with us here this past few minutes, he started drinking, you know, about 10 years old, and significantly by age 14. And he tried to manage it, but it all came crashing down here a few years back. Literally everything gone. Craig, I'm interested just to kind of pick up the story a bit. Were you did you have any sort of faith perspective at that time, when you went into rehab for the time that finally helped you turn around?
Well, I was raised in the church. I went to both a Presbyterian and a Methodist church in Michigan, and you know my parents tried to make sure that I was introduced to that. And for me personally, I think what I was trying to search for was an intellectual understanding of Christ and in the Bible, and to try to learn it as though I was learning something in school. He had the notion of surrender or the notion of living it personally. I'm just talking for me personally. There was no lack of, from my parents thinking that should be important in my life. And I would have described myself, and I did, as a Christian during my adult life. But what happened when I lost everything and on that day, June 29th, when I said his surrender prayer, it was different than anything I had ever thought to do or planned to do in my life. And what happened after was extraordinary and supernatural. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to you know, share it in the book, because God works in such amazing ways, and his brushstrokes through people's catastrophes and disasters can provide such a contrast to what's available in his love and with his grace. And that was part of what I wanted to share, because I know that, you know, my family and in my life, I'm not the only one, you know, that lived away from God in addiction. And I know that my family is not the only family that has had the pain of seeing a loved one go through this. And I wanted to share with folks what's available, what I got to experience, and what I've seen God do time and again in the recovery rooms, in the rehab hospitals, in the hearts of people that stop fighting God and surrender to his will and to his way of life, and what that looks like.
You encountered lots of sort of old friends or acquaintances that just thought, well, you just had a bad outing. But, I mean, you kind of knew you'd been living a double life for a long time, right? Was it difficult to sort of decide that, you know, the new Craig is going to be the honest Craig?
Well, I'll tell you this, and this for your listeners too, addiction is slavery. And I want to say it again, because I know it's a very hard thing for people to hear, because it sounds a little overly dramatic, but it is an enslavement to sin. It's an embodiment of sin to me at a very extreme level. That moves from idolatry of finding a solution that's short of God, you know, that we as humans are subjected to on this earth, that put something out there different from God and make that our solution on this earth. And unlike some of the other things that you can do and that you can make your idols on this earth, addiction, drugs, and alcohol have a biological and a chemical and an emotional, you know, components to them that strip you spiritually. So it's an incredibly wicked position to be in, and to have myself, which I know I'm not the only one that lived this way, to say, well, I will tolerate this slavery, I will manage it to the best that I can. When it consumes my time, when I'm thinking about when I have to go to bed to make sure I have enough for the morning, when I'm operating through the day, I have to make sure that I have enough to not detox or come down from this. But I can't have so much that I can't drive a car legally, or that I can't slur my speech until a point where I can actually drink more and get relief. And it captures the person and enslaves them to where that becomes the most important thing in their life. Not God, not their family, not the people that they love, not the things that anybody would say make the most sense in the world. I was arrested twice in 4 months. I had a 93-day suspended sentence. I did not want to be in the newspaper again. There was no reason for me to be drinking the second time, but for that power in that slavery to sin that we're exposed to when we're living away from God, and we haven't invited that power in to our life that can overcome that evil.
Just our hope is that even those listening today maybe would break free of that and say that prayer that says, Lord, I surrender. That's the starting point. The book we're referencing is Craig DeRoche's story called Highly Functional. It's a collision of addiction, justice, and grace. I want to maybe just transition a bit into talking to Justice Fellowship, because you tell a story in the book at kind of your low point, didn't have any money, but you met a man who was trying to buy a bus ticket, who was at risk of breaking parole and getting back sent to jail for a couple of years. And just maybe tell a bit about that story. And out of that, I'm just wondering, you know, are we really, is the justice system really helping the men that have served time to keep them from going back to prison?
Well, thank you for bringing up that story. And if I could tell your readers a little bit of context on that, that's when I was already working for Justice Fellowship. Chuck Colson had told me that he thought that God could use my life in addiction as well as my life in government in a similar way that God used his life in government and his life in incarceration and carrying the burden of a felony conviction, use both of those for the benefit of others, and that 60 to 80% of our criminal justice system is related to drugs and alcohol and addiction. And he thought that that I could use that as a living tribute and demonstration of a way out in God's power. And that's where I ended up working at Justice Fellowship and Prison Fellowship. And I had encountered a situation where to work for this ministry, I had to earn substantially less than I was accustomed to. And I had closed out my business that I had already said was failing. And so I owed a tax liability. And I couldn't pay the tax liability. I had just found out. But I went outside and a man asked me if I could help him, because he was sent out of prison and he did not have the bus fare to get to, or train fare, actually it was Chicago, to get to where he needed to report by the next day, or he would violate his parole and be returned to prison. And he introduced himself and said, I need your help. And when I didn't answer him right away, he says, I really need your help. You don't understand. I just got out of prison. And I spun around, and he had his hands up, and he said, I'm not going to hurt you. And I said, no, I didn't think you were going to hurt me. I just was wondering why you told me you just got out of prison. That's not the way that, you know, somebody normally panhandles. And he told me the story. And when he got done telling me the story, he didn't even remember that he had said he just got out of prison. And I said to him, there's probably 5 million people walking around these city sidewalks in Chicago right now, but God brought you to the one that cares about the fact that you just got out of prison and had you say that to me. He didn't even remember saying it. And I went up and I got him $100 of my own money and told him that he should take his train. He should not be a burden to his family. He should get back there and check in with his parole officer and that he should pay that forward. And that's when I really knew that God had me where he wanted me here at Prison Fellowship, because I could see that even though I wasn't necessarily able to pay my own debts and bills, that my experience was helping somebody else in a powerful way that day. And it, small miracle.
It's a great story. I recommend it to you. I pick up a copy of Highly Functional. And this is the story of Craig DeRoche. It's a collision of addiction, justice, and grace. Craig is executive director now of Justice Fellowship, the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship. And we're going to hear more about the great work of Prison Fellowship and Justice Fellowship. And I want to just encourage you, if you want to join in, to sign up for a copy of the book. We've got a copy. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. And you may have a question or comment as well. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. More with Craig DeRoche in just a moment.
Freedom's name is mighty sweet, and one day soon we are gonna meet. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on.
Talking today to Craig DeRoche, who's been telling about his story. He's written about it in his memoir called Highly Functional. It takes a period in his life when he transitioned from addiction to recovery, a collision of addiction, justice, and grace. Craig is now serving as executive director of Justice Fellowship, the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship. He met Chuck Colson. Chuck thought, his story in addiction and his fall from political power could be used to really benefit others, and that's what Craig's passion is today. As he speaks and talks about the issues of addiction, you mentioned, Craig, that 60 to 80% of incarceration or people in the justice system are influenced or affected by drugs and alcohol. That's a pretty, no pun intended, sobering statistic.
Well, absolutely, and it's why I think it's important that, you know, we as Christians and in the secular culture start talking more openly about this. It's such a big part of our lives, even outside of the criminal justice system. But if people are looking for the drivers of criminal justice, there is one that is far and away you know, that drives it, and it's addiction to drugs and alcohol. And so your listeners understand that statistic. What it means is not everybody in prison is there for a drug and alcohol dealing, you know, or use. But their crime, if you look at the investigation of what they were doing, they did it because of their addiction. So they broke into houses. Why were they breaking into houses? It was to pay for their drugs. You know, they were violent. Why were they violent? They were in a blackout because they were high on drugs. You know, and on through the list. And it really is the driver. And, you know, the neat thing about our Christian faith and the scripture in the Bible is there is a solution for this. And as I tell people, as I travel the country and I talk about this as Christians, one of the most important things that we can think about when we hear the secular world talk about their problems, to say we have a problem with divorce, we have a problem with abortion, we have a problem with addiction, drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex. To the person doing each one of those things, it's not their problem, it's their solution, right? I drank alcohol rather than looking for a solution in Christ, that God-shaped hole inside of me. Other people turn to violence, theft. Other people might turn to sex outside of a marriage. So there's a mechanical understanding of where the spiritual deficiency is in our culture. I try to help connect that dot and to say, so what you can do in this area, Matthew 25, visit the prisoner. Metaphorically, that's the person that's addicted today. They might not physically be behind bars, but the prisoner that needs to be unlocked, that needs to be set free from the enslavement of sin, the solutions that they've sought that are beneath God, that are always going to be incomplete, that will always be the evil one's playground. But we as Christians can go in as Christ called on us to and serve those people and see God's power demonstrated in such a miraculous way. There's no higher privilege than I have in my life. I'm here today because of God's love and his blood for me on the cross, which is something that I certainly didn't merit or earn or intellectually learn. It was given to me freely for no reason that I deserved. And I get to see that miracle in the others that we get to serve at Prison Fellowship in such a profound way in the prisons, in the criminal justice system, or even in the hearts and the minds of the leaders that awaken to this grace and this mercy that's available and this the real solution that our culture needs, which can be found in Scripture in how we deal with justice. God laid that out for us.
Well, getting back to what we referenced a little bit earlier as you were telling the story about the man who had to get back so that he wouldn't break his parole. So does the system, you know, point to the right solutions? I mean, or is the criminal justice system, is it just another one of our many problems?
Well, what we advocate for at Prison Fellowship, and this comes from Chuck Colson and others' teachings. Chuck wrote over 30 books and on this. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to consolidate this message now so Christians in our culture, whether they're advocates, whether they're in the criminal justice system, whether they're empowered to actually make a difference, understand these intersections of what is not working well. And there's three areas that we focus on. One is the proportion of the punishment, which is scriptural, the constructive culture inside of the prison, which is all the Prison Fellowship programming. What we're trying to do is to change the culture so while people are there, they can be exposed to the word, they can be exposed to the freedom that comes in the life that God would have people live. And then on the outside of prison or outside of the criminal justice system, once you've completed your sentence as this person on the street, the closure. We have no closure in this country. We treat people beneath what they are. They're a human being created in the image of God. And for somebody like the gentleman that I met on the sidewalk, somebody that's paid back his debt to society, but we treat them as subhuman And then we wonder why the return to sin, the return to crime, and it seems to be on a conveyor belt where people come in and out of the system. We create those things ourselves because we live beneath our own values and our own calling, and it starts with the value of each person's life, and it can be shown in very powerfully in these intersections of is it proportionate what we sentence you? When you're in the criminal justice system, is what we expose you to moving away from crime or toward it? And then when you pay back your debt to society, do you have a chance to be a dad again? Do you have a chance to get a job again? Do you have a chance to use your experience for the benefit of others? Or do we push you back toward a life of crime? And that's really, for your listeners, the focus of the advocacy that we do around the country is in those three areas.
Is there maybe in one of those three areas where we as God's people or maybe collectively as a church could have the most influence or impact? I mean, is it in kind of, you know, advocating for sentencing structures, or is it just, you know, being literally visiting those in prison, or is it just being there to help get someone reintegrated into society?
Well, Neil, I know that you have listeners ranging the full spectrum of folks, so if it's okay, and I'll do it quickly, on the proportionate punishment, that debate is going on today as we speak in Congress in closed doors, soon to be out in the public. We've treated our citizenry very poorly. We've given them mandatory minimum sentences, which devalues them individually. We've held people in a very disproportionate and unjust way in this country at the federal, state, and local level. Those policies are being changed, and somebody could get involved by coming to Justice Fellowship and advocating alongside us. It's not a partisan adventure. I assure you it's people as diverse as from President Obama to the Koch brothers to people running for president like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, to Hillary Clinton and others that agree that we need to change the sentencing. I know a lot of your listeners probably are involved in the culture, the constructive culture in prison, by getting involved and volunteering in prison ministries and programming and great programs like Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree to support the families and to teach prisoners that while they're there, there is a new life and they don't have to wait till they're out to start living it. They can help us advocate for that by literally changing the culture inside the prison to one that is a productive and a fruitful experience for the individual and for the community and practically for the staff as well. We've seen the staff embrace these programs. And then third, enclosure. I know you have listeners out there that own businesses or that are in a position within their business to have a voice. And in America, we exclude tens of millions of people from the workforce that are moms and dads with little kids, people that want to pay their bills, that do not want to be wards of the state, that want to be contributing members of society. And we need to help find that closure, help reintegrate, re-socialize people back into a normal life once they've paid back their debts.
Where did it get to the point where we have so kind of excluded and devalued, people? Was it, while at the same time wanting to affirm the rule of law? I mean, can those two go together?
They absolutely can. And what we believe is that when you hold somebody accountable for their crime, that is a part of valuing their worth as a human being as well. That if somebody would have simply said, well, you've surrendered to God and you appear to have had a change spiritually, so we don't we'll get rid of the fact that you did these things that were against the law, that would be devaluing me as well. And most of the people that have been incarcerated that have done things, violent crimes, other things, would say if you took away the accountability for what I did, you would be devaluing me. You would have robbed me of my spiritual growth. I needed to make those amends. I needed to have that as part of my life. But what, as Christians, we want to do is to say that should be a clear message that what you did, we're going to hold you accountable for it. And once we've held you accountable for it, then that's it. You can be a citizen again. You can be back to living as our neighbor. And most importantly, at Prison Fellowship, what we believe, similar to the organization that was founded by Bill W. called Alcoholics Anonymous, where they said the solution to having fewer people in addiction would be the people that have recovered from addiction, that had surrendered their will to God, would be able to help others leave addiction. We believe that people that have violated the laws, been held accountable, and paid back society are the key to helping the people move away from it today. So we want to invite them, as Chuck Colson did, to demonstrate in their life that that is something that can be used to glorify God and advance His kingdom on this earth. Their experience, yes, it can be a positive, just as the apostles and others that were imprisoned that did, some of them, horrific crimes, to use that experience to advance the kingdom, their own recovery, their own way in which they've not only been redeemed and forgiven by God, but in this world, what they've done to atone for those sins can be used for the benefit of others.
You know, you're talking earlier about such a wide sort of spectrum of people that are engaged in talking about reform. If prison reform is an issue that has bipartisan support, I know you talk a little bit about that in your book, why doesn't more get changed? Or is there change taking place and we just don't hear about it?
There's a rapid acceleration of the change that is occurring. 3 years ago, when I was coming up on 4 years ago, when I first started in this space, people would only talk about criminal justice change because it would save money in the budget, and it was a practical application of it. Today, people are talking about their values, whether their values are found in Scripture and in their faith, or whether their values are a secular understanding of just the value of human life and in a fairness, and they're coming together in a way that is changing laws for employers to hire people in Ohio, in other states. Proportionate sentencing, we're seeing changes dramatically. Louisiana this year just reduced. They had a 20-year penalty for the third time you would be caught possessing marijuana, 20-year mandatory minimum. If you can imagine that, it's legal in Colorado, but in Louisiana, you could spend 20 years of your life in prison for possessing a drug for your personal use. That was wildly disproportionate. They changed that law. We're seeing that every day in Congress. I think in fairness to Congress and to see some of the mistakes that have been made over the last 40 years, I think it's probably okay that they're taking months to get that right, but they are progressing. I would hate to see them whipsaw something too quickly, and then it could be done quickly, because when we're talking about human beings and the fall, in our understanding of this as Christians, we know that it's not going to be perfect. Perfect comes later. And it's not in our human control, and the government isn't going to be the ones that deliver perfection. So with each of these laws, each of these improvements, there are going to be questions from the public where they'll say, yes, but this person that would have went to prison did another crime, and so should we go back to incarcerating them? And so we've got to think through all those things so we have a solid basis for this, that the public understands it's in line with our values when it gets put into law.
Craig DeRoche joining our conversation today as we talk about restorative justice and the criminal justice system at the federal, state, and local level. Craig is the executive director of Justice Fellowship. It's the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship, the wonderful ministry established by Chuck Colson so many years ago. And we've seen a tremendous progress taking place. There's still more to be done, opportunities for us to serve as the body of Christ in some very effective ways. Craig has also written about his own personal journey of years of addiction, alcohol addiction, and his addiction, and then the collision of addiction, justice, and grace. The book is called Highly Functional, and we've got a copy of that we'll give away here at the end of the hour. It's 877-93-FAITH. If you'd like to sign up for the drawing for that, you may know somebody that's has some addiction issues and that just would need to read another story and know that there is a path to hope and transformation. 877-933-2484. More with Craig DeRoche in just a moment.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
Well, there's no doubt, I'm sure, those that are incarcerated. Time does drag. Craig DeRoche serves as Executive Director of Justice Fellowship. It's the advocacy arm of Prison Fellowship Ministries. His story is written about personal life, a story and transformation in the book Highly Functional. Craig, we do hold the notorious position of right the incarcerating the most citizens of any nation, right, in the United States?
Not only that, it's the highest incarceration rate that we've been able to find in human history. It's well beyond the totalitarian governments of Mao and Hitler, and it's beyond the percentage of people, even when you look at the apartheid in South Africa, the level of incarceration of their black population in Africa is roughly the same percentage in America of our white population. And the black population was saying that was oppressive, and they overcame apartheid. That's our Caucasian population in prison is at that level. In our African-American population in the prisons is 8 times that in America. So it's truly a problem of, to me, looking to government for an answer to who we are and how we should be as human beings rather than God's principles. And that's why we think that God's principles and values as it comes to justice is the answer of how to unwind that.
You know, yesterday we had a sheriff on from Ramsey County talking law enforcement. It was a national night out. I'm just interested, maybe how would you rate the system, I guess, working from maybe the lowest level, the local community police force, to the highest courts? Is there parts that don't work well, but some that are working well?
Yeah, I think that the lowest level works the best, and I think that has always been true of every government, that people would say that their police chief and their police force and for their county sheriff, are the ones that get this, and they are the people that exercise the discretion. And as you had a Christian sheriff on your show, I bet he understands all of this, and I bet he could give examples of where he applies restorative justice every day. And the same would be true of the county prosecutor. But what we have in our country and what has occurred over the last 40 years, starting with the war on drugs and in the Nixon work to be tough on crime on a national policy, is we've set policy at the federal level and at the state level, well above these local players, that has said, we're going to devalue the person. We're going to say, if you do this, you get 10 years. We don't care what the opinion of the sheriff and the prosecutor and the local judge is. We've decided as a legislature, before the crime was even committed, how long the person's going to go to prison. And that devalues human life. And then we've built in structural problems where we would say to a local sheriff, if you work with the person and their family and the victim to restore that victim for what the person did. So let's say it was somebody that stole a laptop out of somebody's car and you caught them. Well, you need to resolve that for the victim, right? And you need to so the victim is made whole in the community that's affected by this, because that, you know, a theft is a tear in the fabric of the community. Restore that. And local people do that well. But what we've said to them is, if you do that, that will be very expensive and hard for you to do with our policies. But if you send them to the state prison, that's not in your budget, that's free, right? So we've built in these moral hazards, you know, and perverse incentives to our local law enforcement to say, you know what, even though this crime of drug dealing in this county could be prosecuted and dealt with and eradicated in this county, I could turn them over to the federal government or the state prosecutors, and it wouldn't be a burden to my budget. and their penalties are harsher. And so we have structural problems, but I would say to the sheriff that was on there, they're the answer. You know, the local prosecutor, the local sheriff, give them the resources, give them the guidance, get rid of these perverse incentives where you incentivize them to send people to prison, incentivize them instead to move somebody away from crime and to restore the victim of the crime, and I think our country would start to heal.
You know, talking about budgets, if we had money in the budget, if we had money maybe individually that we could spend and we wanted to have an impact in restorative justice, where would that be? I mean, from a county or a federal level, I mean, where should the money maybe be redirected? And individually, obviously, you know, Prison Fellowship, Justice Fellowship, Angel Tree, all those things. But where should the money go?
Well, fortunately, we have the money in this country because incarceration is the most expensive, bluntest, most inefficient instrument that's ever been invented to incarcerate another human being. And we spend more in most states, in my home state of Michigan, than we do in higher education. And in most states spend more on incarceration than they do in higher education. And so there's money out there. It just needs to be redirected into investments of restoring the victims and the community and giving the person that has caused the harm a pathway to atone for what they did and to restore themselves in the community and to use the prison, the incarceration, for unrepentant people that are an ongoing risk or people that have done crimes where the community believes that they're not safe unless that person is removed. So when you get to the rape and the murder and unrepentant folks that are serial burglars and things, you say, that's what the prison's for, because if you're out of prison, you're going to continue, so we need to remove you. But for 60 to 80% of the folks that are in prison, given the opportunity, they would probably work to voluntarily, in their own willingness, to work to restore the damage that they did and move away from that life. And that's where it actually would cost us less money than what we already spend.
Craig, you've over the years had businesses, successful businesses, made a lot of money, also, you know, been in high places in politics. What does it mean to you to be serving and working for Justice Fellowship now? How is that maybe compared to all that you've done in the past?
There's no greater privilege that I've had in my life than to serve in this ministry and to have God show me that even though I messed up so many things and that I was unworthy of His grace and His love, that He could turn that around and use that for the benefit of other people. Not for me, but for the benefit of other people. And it's just such a humbling experience to be able to serve in this way and privilege every day and privilege to see the living monuments that God builds through this ministry at Prison Fellowship and through the individuals that work alongside each other over the course of the year to affect hundreds of thousands of people through this ministry. So it's just an amazing privilege every day. I rate it way above being Speaker of the House in a state, Neil, to give you a score, but I can't put it on a numbers. It's infinitely more important.
Yeah, and no desire to drink anymore either.
God remove that compulsion to drink. So for those of you that are listening that have failed, as I did thousands of times, God can remove that compulsion in you today, and I'll be praying for you and encourage you to surrender completely to Him.
Our thoughts and prayers with you, Craig, and your wife, Stacy, and the kids, and the great work at Justice Fellowship. The book is called Highly Functional. Craig DeRoche, Executive Director of Justice Fellowship.